From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
This week, we'll be joined by Robert Vaught, superintendent of Detour Area Schools, way up in the Upper Peninsula. We'll work our way downstate and talk with Justin Thorington, the athletic director and assistant principal at Traverse City Central High School. And then coming all the way downstate, we'll chat with Dr. Stiles Simmons, superintendent of Westwood Community Schools. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Superintendent of Detour Area School District and the Detour Arts and Technology Academy, Mr. Bob Vaught. Welcome to the program, Bob.
Well, thank you, Mr. Livernoy, for inviting me. I truly appreciate it.
Yes, I appreciate your time today, and I wanted to let you know, with the cold weather upon us, there really isn't a better school superintendent to talk to than you about some of the weather challenges, especially given how unique your district is. For our School Talks listeners, Detour's on the eastern side of the Upper Peninsula, and as I understand it, it takes in part of Drummond Island and all of the weather challenges that come with that. And I think a good place to start, Mr. Vaught, would be how do weather conditions like snow, ice, and temperatures typically affect your students' ability to get to school and really their overall attendance?
It's because we're on the eastern tip of the Upper Peninsula, we're affected by, the lakes. We have Lake Huron to south of us, Lake Michigan to the west, and Lake Superior to the northwest. But we also have what's called the North Channel that is between Drummond Island and Ontario. Our district's 367 square miles, and the weather can be different from one end of that our school district to another. It may get 4 inches of snow on Drummond Island, and I might get 2 feet of snow up in Rayburn, which is up on the west end of our district. We deal with a lot of different types of weather. We had a bus pulling through the driveway here to drop kids off, and the air brakes, it's an air system, and a pneumatic system, the doors wouldn't open and the air brakes had locked up because we had ice in the airlines. So we had to exit the kids out the back of the bus, and it was a great day for an evacuation drill. Then we took a propane torch and warmed it up. But as we roll into this cold weather, the lake effect's going to definitely have wreak havoc on us, and it's an everyday thing we have to think about.
I have to imagine in the last few years, you could point to at least one significant weather event that really disrupted school operations. Any one you could think of you could share with our listeners?
I can't think of any in the past couple of years because our weather's been inconsistent. But I do remember in 2019, on November 10th, we had a massive snowstorm of heavy snow. And across the district, I had power outages, and I had to bring people in because the trees dropped across the power lines, and we had to bring people in to stay at our school as an emergency evacuation site. But more often, we get affected by the winds on the lake, in the river, because we do have a ferry boat that runs back and forth between Drummond Island and Detour, and there are days in which the wind picks up. I'm in touch with the captains on the boat every day, and if we get a southeast or a south wind, it really affects the way the waves and the rollers come up the channel and make it unsafe to dock the boat. So we have to literally close down the school for those days.
Are there any specific protocols you have in place for communicating when things like that happen, other than maybe a phone call? I would imagine this is a pretty well-understood phenomena up there, but I'm curious what kinds of protocols you have in place in terms of communicating with those on the boats and you and parents involved. How does all of that work together?
usually we anticipate. We watch the weather very closely up here. A group of superintendents and I, the whole county pays attention. And I run three different weather stations from my own house, monitoring the low pressure systems, winds, and all that. And we anticipate. Oftentimes, if we know there's going to be a big storm rolling in, I'll call school the night before. Mm-hmm. It's very handy. Parents don't have to find daycare or daycare issues and things like that. It gives them data to figure that out. Living up here, most people are used to it. But I do monitor that, and when it finally happens, I will send a message out through Skillshare. It's an app we have in the school district in which all the parents are listed in their cell phone, social media. Email, it sends all three of those out to everybody mm-hmm. in the district. And it's rather, you know, I get a lot of text messages, hey, Mr. Vaught, call off school. Hey, Mr. Vaught, no, we don't do it. Because it's all about student safety, the whole thing. You know, it's about student safety first and foremost. And I'm not willing to risk, you know, having a kid, a student get hurt. In January, because we need to make 6 days, we don't want to use our days up. But I'd rather have them alive in June than die in January.
well put. You know, in my time as superintendent, the only thing I can think of that's equivalent to the weather and the ferry and Drummond Island is occasionally our students would be late for school when the train would block the road. And the school bus couldn't get through. A small comparison to what you're dealing with. We're currently chatting with Mr. Bob Vaught, superintendent of Detour Area School District and the Detour Arts and Technology Academy. Mr. Vaught, let me follow up on, it's pretty obvious, your student attendance is probably much more affected in the winter months than the summer months. And somewhat independent of that, as we sit here in the middle of the school year and you're looking into the winter months and that. Anything in particular you're doing to address this than you have in the years past, or is this a pretty well-established protocol?
It's a pretty well-established protocol, but we're still living in the, I call it the COVID echo effect, mm-hmm. in which, it's more about runny noses and coughs and stuff. We actually are focusing this year on our attendance to defeat that echo effect from COVID. And even weather, when parents don't want to send their kids over on the boat, we started. It's called an on time every time challenge, and it's a month to month reward incentive system. We've noticed we've had a couple, students who have been chronically absent, which is 10% of the school year, 18 days out of 180, mm-hmm. and we're trying to really focus on that. The weather does play a major part, though. I looked at our attendance from 2023 and 24. And to present, and it fluctuated between 92%, and this year thus far we're at 96%. Again, we didn't have a wind. We didn't have a wind day this fall. I can usually anticipate a wind day based on the weather changes, mm-hmm. in which ferry boat can't run. But generally speaking, our people are pretty well aware of what to expect. Mm-hmm. And we will run into those snow days. We anticipate them coming up. I just hope that it's a regular year for snow instead of the sporadic winters we've had the last couple of winters, because we'll have a good snowstorm, then it'll rain, and the rain hits our rural roads and turns it into ice, and it's mm-hmm. just an ice sheet. Even last night, I took a group up to Rudyard, and one of our roads out of town was almost a glare sheet of ice, and I'm like, gosh. It's too early for that now.
Sure. Just for context, you mentioned the district is 367 square miles. And in that square mileage, how long are some of your students on the bus to and from school?
Our longest one's probably, I would go an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half.
Sure.
And that's on the backside of the island.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Mr. Bob Vaught, superintendent of Detour Area School District and the Detour Arts and Technology Academy. As always, keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir, very much. It's been a pleasure.
After a word from our sponsors, we're heading to Traverse City to chat with Justin Thorington. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins & Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Justin Thorington, the principal from Traverse City Central High School. Welcome to the program, Justin.
Thanks, Robert. Pleasure to be here.
I appreciate your time. One of the things we try to do on School Talks is touch as many schools across the state as we can. And in your case, there's not many better than those in Traverse City, and not just because of the Cherries and Cherry Republic and all that stuff, but really a storied town and a lot of great traditions. And one of the things that intrigued me about your school is your student athlete leadership organization. And I'm curious, how did this idea for the organization originate, and what did you hope to achieve when you first established it?
Sure. Well, actually, in my first year as an athletic director, when I was at a school called Dansville down in the Lansing area, I attended an athletic director's conference actually here in Traverse City, where I attended a session on student leadership, where I learned about this student-athlete leadership model. And ever since I attended that conference, I got copies of the materials and have sort of toyed and designed the program kind of for years, but never had a chance to really implement it. And then when I was applying and going through the interview process here at Traverse City Central, a coach in the interview committee asked about developing leadership within our student athletes, in which at that point I got to share a little bit about sort of this thing I'd adapted over the years and how I wanted to implement it here at Traverse City Central. Once I got the job, I sort of followed through on that. I had the support of the principal at the time to implement this student athlete leadership organization, with the desired outcome, quite simply, is to arm our student athletes with leadership skills.
Mm-hmm. So, could you give our School Talks listeners maybe an example or two of how you develop a leadership skill, and really, maybe even more importantly, character among student athletes?
Yeah, for sure. So we have a large group of 48 student athlete leaders in this group. And so every varsity coach has the opportunity to nominate up to four student athletes from their program who either currently demonstrate leadership ability or have the potential to be a good leader with some training. And so from there, that group is distilled down so that each program has two representatives. And we meet once a month as a large group. And each month, there's a scope and sequence to for the year. And each month, there's a different leadership topic that we dive into. That's really where they get the bulk of that sort of leadership training. And that, you know, obviously, there's a little bit of a lecture, a little bit of sit and get, but a lot of supporting activities to sort of kind of support whatever they're learning, and then a lot of opportunities for students to connect and talk about what they've experienced or how they experience this within their teams.
Mm-hmm.
From there, that large group of 48 is broken down into six smaller teams of eight, and student athletes work within those smaller teams throughout the year to complete different leadership opportunities that they're required to do throughout the year. So, you know, their leadership skills and character are developed, one, through the learning at the large team meetings, but then they're asked to then go and put that learning into action.
And I have to imagine, given how intensely connected students are nowadays through social media and a whole bunch of other platforms, you must be seeing these efforts impact the overall culture within your athletic program and maybe even the school at large. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. We try to make the learning as local as possible. And so actually my first year here, it might've been my second year here, but first year that we implemented Salo, we had some issues within our student section related to just their behavior towards opposing teams and players from opposing teams. Specifically, I remember two volleyball matches against Traverse City West. We'd beat them for the first time twice in a row. And after each of those matches, a few of the members of our student section, acted in a way that wasn't really the way we wanted to be represented at Traverse City Central High School. So that was like sort of a catalyst for me to work with our student athlete leaders to say, hey, you know what, as leaders, sometimes you're going to be put in uncomfortable positions where you have to put your peers in check, and leadership takes courage, and you know, the right thing to do is not always the easy thing to do. And they took that call to action and totally changed the culture of our student section. It's not perfect by any means. However, I can rely on my student athlete leaders when we have issues within our student section to either check their peers in the moment and let them know what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate. And if they're not able to, I can go over there and talk to a few of my student athlete leaders and say, hey, here's what I'm seeing. You guys need to make it right. And it's totally transformed the culture of our student section and into one. Again, we still get some of those you can't do that chants, but more than anything, we really try to push them to support their fellow Trojans versus, you know, be there to just kind of troll the other team.
We're currently chatting with Justin Thornton, the assistant principal and athletic director at Traverse City Central High School. And Justin, the way you characterize that sort of peer-to-peer interaction, if anyone's familiar with Traverse City, the rivalry up there among your high schools is about as feverish as it gets. So I think about how beneficial it is to put a student leader in that position to do it while maintaining the respect of his or her peers is a really important opportunity for them. I'm just curious, how do you and the executive board identify and prepare students for the actual leadership roles in this organization?
Yeah, specifically with my executive board, which are called team captains, we meet outside of the big team meetings once a month, where it's just my six captains and I, and we dive a little bit deeper into some deeper leadership things. So we do a book study, we look at podcasts, and kind of dissect sort of the leadership themes from there. But more importantly, we sort of give updates on where each team is with their leadership opportunities and help troubleshoot and have the students really troubleshoot with each other on how to overcome issues related to, you know, communication issues or a student athlete on their team who's not pulling their weight. And so really the work there makes it become really student-led, and really the organization is student-led. Outside of what I deliver or what we deliver in terms of that leadership education during the big team meetings, everything else is completely student run. Mm-hmm. So each team is assigned to one of our feeder elementary schools to reach out to their principals and go do good work with future Trojans. I don't do anything but give them the contact information of who the principal is at that school. They communicate directly with that school to coordinate those events. Mm-hmm. I work with students to assign what we call central strong events, which is a really cool idea that came directly from feedback our first year of Salo. Initially, the idea was that each team would just go to a sporting event and make that sporting event special and sort of shine a lot of light on that sporting event. But as we did a leadership lesson and kind of rated where Central was in terms of like their inclusion of all sports or all groups within our school, our students said, hey, we need to get better about like shining a light on those programs that don't get a lot of light shown on them, right? Like everyone goes to a football game or a basketball game or a mm-hmm. hockey game, but how many of our student athletes actually, or how many of our students actually go to the band expo or to a bowling mm-hmm. to a bowling match, right? And so, our student athlete, or each one of our smaller teams led by captains, then identify those events where they want to sort of plan and make it special, and then they just go execute that themselves. Mm-hmm. So it really is student driven.
I'm really curious how your group involves multiple service components. Like you mentioned TCAP Strong, and I guess you would call it Salo Strong. And mm-hmm. What strategies do you use to coordinate these events while maintaining student involvement in the group?
Yeah, my role really is to help students identify those different opportunities and not necessarily give them to them, right? Like the old adage about teach a man to fish or give a man to fish, right? Mm-hmm. My job is to help them, explain what the purpose of each of those service components are. So Central Strong, the purpose of that, again, is to highlight and build an inclusive student body. TCAP Strong, the idea about that is to build that Trojan spirit in future Trojans. And then Salo Strong, which looks like your typical community service, is just about giving back to the community that gives us. So so much. So my job, I feel like my role is to help them understand what each one of those components are, and then put the ball in their court to say, okay, what do you guys see as opportunities with each one of these?
Mm-hmm.
And help them through their thinking on that. So again, like, as much as I can put on my students, you know, they learn by doing, they learn by putting this stuff in action. So as much as possible, I try to put the sort of the onus and the power in the students' hands.
Mm-hmm. So, Justin, I need to take a short break. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
We're back here on School Talks chatting with Justin Thorington, the assistant principal and athletic director at Traverse City Central High School. So I'm curious, from a student perspective, mm-hmm. what challenges do they often encounter that prompts them to come to you for help? Can you give us an example?
You know, the biggest issue that we troubleshoot all the time is just a member of the team who isn't communicating or isn't following through on the commitments that they're laid out to, right? And so we try to troubleshoot about, okay, in what other ways can you communicate with this student athlete? How can you pull them aside one-on-one, right? Because one of the messages I try to send to our student athlete leaders is, you guys are future presidents and CEOs and GMs and captains, and you're going to have leadership skills outside of the sports arena, you know, for the rest of your life. And these are issues that you're going to have to navigate, you know, as you start your post-secondary life. And so what better way to sort of learn and practice this now when the stakes are a lot lower, you know, than as student leaders within CELO.
Mm-hmm.
So communication's a really big one. Follow through and follow up is a really big one. And then the other one that, again, that we kind of hammer home all the time is that leadership takes courage. There's going to be times when you're going to have to check your peers or check a teammate, or stand up for something that you believe in that you might not have the backing of everyone on, or that is just, you know, sort of against the grain. And but that's what the best leaders do, is they're able to find that courage and work through it.
You know, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned part of your role in this is sort of hands off, to let the students manage it and handle things accordingly. I have to imagine, though, in some of those real world topics like social media pressure or mm-hmm. some of the dynamics that go on in a school like Central, there has to be a time where you insert yourself or somehow be the guide that's absolutely necessary. And I'm curious, do you typically focus on the group at large, or do you achieve something like that through a leader or two?
A little bit of both. So when we meet monthly as the big team, that's where I play the biggest role. So I, you know, design the scope and sequence and design the leadership learning for each meeting. And so there's a lot of some sit and get, right? Like, here's the idea of like what service leadership is, right? And then I can lecture on a little bit, but then really when I turn it back over to them is like, okay, now turn and talk with your partner or talk with your group about this concept. And can you identify some areas where you recognize yourself as, you know, as a service leader or whatever that leadership topic is? And then we bring it out. So it's kind of telescoped, right? It starts with me as the individual sort of teaching. Then it's a little bit of partner work, and then it's work within your group. And then it's a large group share out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one way that I can help guide some of these tricky situations. And then one thing we love to do, one thing I love to do is each meeting sort of has a cadence, right? The students come in, they get their lunch, we provide lunch, they sit down at their table, we do some what's good share outs, where we get to, you know, give some compliments to either people in the room or just things that they've witnessed that they wanted to give a shout out for. But then right after that, we do an ethical dilemma, and typically that ethical dilemma is a real life example of something that could happen. Now, certainly sometimes I'll take like things that are happening within our athletic department. Obviously, I'll change names or change the situation a little bit so that they don't know exactly. Kids are really smart. If I lay the situation out, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to adapt it a little bit, and then I have them work through it in their groups, work through the ethical dilemma, and how they might handle it, what things they would need to overcome, who they could get to help them overcome or work through those different leadership mm-hmm. dilemmas, and then we talk about it as a large group.
Justin Thorington, the assistant principal and athletic director at Traverse City Central High School. First and foremost, congratulations on bringing this organization to the school. The kind of work you're doing is often not seen in test scores and stuff like that, but it's every bit as important to the future for those students. And I want to commend you on a great job. And as always, thanks for joining us on School Talks, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
After the break, we're headed downstate to chat with Dr. Stiles Simmons from Westwood Community School District. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Dr. Stiles Simmons, Superintendent of Westwood Community School District. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I appreciate you taking time to chat with us. For our School Talks listeners, could you tell us a bit about Westwood Community Schools, where you're located, and how many students do you serve there in your community?
Okay, so here at Westwood Community School District, we proudly serve the communities of Dearborn Heights, Inkster, and Detroit. We are located in Dearborn Heights. However, we are boundary stretch across Inkster and parts of Dearborn as well. We have currently about 1,487 students, grades K through 12. We have three high schools. We have a traditional high school or comprehensive high school, which is Robichaud High School. We also have our Westwood North Academy, which is our alternative high school. And then we have a Westwood Virtual Academy, which is our virtual high school, mm-hmm. grades 9 through 12. We have two elementary schools and one middle school.
Fantastic. And I understand you as a district have been doing some really, in my research, some really neat bond improvements across the district. And I'm curious how you think the upgrade of your facilities is helping students maybe either in their attendance at school or their engagement in the learning process.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you asked that question. So across Westwood, you know, we're seeing already that our upgraded facilities are transforming the student experience. When students now walk into buildings that are more modern and welcoming and equipped with the tools they need to learn, it sends a powerful message that they are valued. And that's one of the main reasons why we wanted to improve and upgrade our facilities. I don't know if you know, but the last bond that was passed prior to the 2023 bond was in 1958, and that was to build Robichaud High School. So our facilities have needed a lot of tender, loving care, and now we're really taking steps to address that issue. Also, as we know from our own data and national research, that students are much more likely to attend school on a regular basis when the environment supports their engagement and well-being. We were fortunate enough to receive a healthy allocation of ESSER dollars during the pandemic, and we utilized or leveraged those dollars to incorporate new unit ventilators in every classroom that are capable of producing not only heat but conditioned air. So we have a pretty nice climate or temperature in our classrooms, you know, throughout the entire school year now, which is really beneficial. Mm-hmm. And we were able to do some other infrastructure things, but I'm really happy with where we are in terms of our bond project and the steps that we took to leverage our ESSER mm-hmm. dollars to make facility improvements as well.
The timing of your bond passing in 2023, which is really as the pandemic was coming to an end. The timing of that is really interesting, given your district, like so many, have had challenges with student attendance. And I'm curious how your teachers and staff have collaborated to try to identify students who are struggling with attendance, and maybe how do you wrap that into working with parents and family members to help reduce what, you know, you are definitely not alone in terms of attendance challenges. I face them as a superintendent myself, and I'm curious how you're sort of packaging that together to address that issue.
Well, so as you pointed out, student attendance or chronic absenteeism is not a local issue. This is a national issue. It impacts certain communities more than others, but this is an issue that most school leaders and school communities are dealing with. Here at Westwood, we have attendance teams at every school building, and those teams consist of teachers and counselors, social workers, administrators, and the like. And they work as a unified team to identify students who may be struggling with attendance. We also partner with Concentric Educational Solutions. They hire PSAs or folks to go out into the community to conduct home visits. And typically the home visits are designed to communicate, you know, the importance of student attendance when we identify students who are not attending on a regular basis. But then we also try to incorporate words of encouragement. We also try to pass on resources to our families to better support them, because bottom line is we're looking to strengthen the home and school community connection, because we understand that that's where you get the biggest bang for your buck. Reaching out to students and families, creating individualized support plans when needed. We also want the student to know that someone notices and cares when they're not here. And that makes a tremendous difference. And you know, for chronic absenteeism, this is a complex challenge. This is not, you know, doesn't require some simple solution. So we are continuing to collaborate with our social workers, admin teams at every building, along with our professional partner, which in this case is Concentric Educational Solutions, to get our families the support that they need so that their children can attend school on a regular basis.
Your acknowledgement that this is a tough problem, it really is an understatement, and it points to the issue of our society demands rigor in our schools. And what schools are faced with is, how do you balance rigor and what you put on students academically with the socio-emotional side that comes with what we're dealing with, and how those two come together? I'm curious, in your district, how do you balance that need for academic growth with the socio-emotional side that ultimately affects attendance? Because, as you know, if we push them too hard, they're not going to come to school.
Well, yeah, and that sometimes that is the case. We understand very well and very clearly that academic achievement and social-emotional well-being are inseparable. And so we do try to strike a balance between rigorous instruction and robust support, such as counseling services, restorative practices, which we're committed to, and mental health resources. Through the pandemic, we were able to leverage our ESSER dollars to increase the amount of staff that we have to help address the mental health issues that many of our students were facing and still face. And coming out of the pandemic, fortunately for us, we've received increases in at-risk funding, so 31A funds from the state, and we now utilize those dollars to keep that staff in place. So we have social workers and behavior therapists, student support specialists, and advocates at all of our school buildings to try to strike that balance between rigorous instruction and social-emotional well-being. We know that by addressing stress, anxiety, and other social-emotional factors, we can remove some of the barriers that often lead to missed school days. And we feel that this approach ensures that students feel safe, supported, mm-hmm. and ready to learn. And obviously that has a direct impact on attendance.
One final question for you. As I understand, as you near the completion of the work at Robichaud High School, if I'm a brand new student to the high school and I walk in that building, what am I going to notice first from all of the work you're doing?
Well, I think first you'll notice the improvements to our athletic facilities. You'll also notice that we've invested very heavily in the safety and security of our facility, so new exterior doors. I think you would also notice that we have better climate control in our classrooms. Again, so you're not worried about sweating to death in a classroom in August and September or in May or June. But more importantly, for those who are coming to, you know, experience the full complement of offerings that we have, so such as athletics and extracurricular activities, you'll notice that those facilities have been upgraded and enhanced. And we do have families that take a look at our athletic facilities and other common spaces, mm-hmm. and they do choose to send their children mm-hmm. to our school as a result.
Sure.
I have to say that, you know, prior to our bond project and our CARES Act project, you know, I would go to some of the away games and, you know, and kind of hear some of the side conversations that students were having about the turf field that this other school had, or, you know, the nice new gym that this, you know, another school may have, and you know, and why can't they have the same things?
Mm-hmm.
And that was heartbreaking. I knew there wasn't much that we could do outside of, you know, passing a bond so that we could have, you know, the funding necessary to make those improvements for our students. And now they're seeing it, you know, come to fruition. And you know, they light up, you know, the smiles on their face and the things that they say, you know, some of the words that they, you know, use. I can't communicate on this interview, but you know, it expresses, you know, their happiness, and so you know, that's really what counts in my mind.
A great place to go to school. Dr. Stiles Simmons,
yes.
The superintendent of Westwood Community School District. I want to thank you for joining us on School Talks today, and as always, keep up the great work.
Thank you very much.
As we close out today's program, I'd like to thank my guests, Robert Vaught from Detour Area Schools, way up in the Upper Peninsula, Justin Thorington from Traverse City Central High School, and Dr. Stiles Simmons from Westwood Community School District. That's all the time we have for today, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.